Welcome to The Art of the Interview. I'm your host, Stephen Adams. We're privileged to be talking with Seymour Cassell, one of the greatest living actors in America right now. And I do not say that lightly. Mr. Cassell is a product of the fervent post-World War II artistic ferment that was going on in New York City in the 50s, a product of the Actors Studio, where he studied under the legendary Stella Adler, and later Lee Strasberg. He had a collaboration with Mr. John Cassavetes, which gave him his on-screen debut in the film Shadows. He was also an associate producer in that film. That collaboration also gave him the Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor in the role of Chet in Faces. And this was a collaboration that ended only with Cassavetes' untimely death. I could also go on to say that not only is he a founding member of the American independent cinema, but he's had a second renaissance in that same world, as exemplified by his trifecta of films with Wes Anderson. And now we're here to talk to him today about Reach For Me, his latest film, which was directed by LeVar Burton, stars Mr. Seymour Cassell, of course, Alfre Woodard, Adrienne Barbeau, Johnny Whitworth, and Lacey Chabert. Reach For Me is having its West Coast premiere at the Downtown Film Festival Los Angeles. And I won't go on too much more about it. I'll let Mr. Cassell speak for himself in these matters and many, many others about his love for downtown Los Angeles, his history in L.A., and so many other fascinating topics. And yes, definitely advice for young actors. Mr. Cassell, take it away.
Hello, it's Steve Adams. How are you?
Steve, Seymour Cassell. I'm pretty good.
Pleasure to meet you.
And you as well.
I'm sitting here looking at a picture of you with a beautiful swirl of smoke, and I'm thinking if I could be half as cool as you, my life would be perfect.
It's beautiful. Yeah, right. I mean...
So tell me about
that's
your experience.
That's the only bad habit I got left.
Well, you know, got to have something. Got to have something like that in your life, right?
That's true.
So tell me about your experiences on Reach For Me.
Well,
what was it like working with LeVar Burton?
LeVar was, he was good to work with. He's an actor, you know, so most actors, and that's who I started with, John Cassavetes.
Yes.
They like other actors. Because they're used to them and they need them to make a performance happen. So he was very understanding of that. And the people that produced it, Charlene Blaine, who, you know, had been an actress and done some acting, but she found a great story. And her partner Susan produced it, and they got LeVar. He called me, gave me the script, I read it, and I said yes. I didn't know it would be, we shot it, you know, in August, out in Burbank and up in Tujunga.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it was a difficult shoot because the heat was so bad.
Mm.
And the long hours that we worked, but the cast were so great to work with, Leslie. Lindsay Chabert and Johnny Whitworth and Alfre Woodard, who I knew and liked a lot, and it was fun. It turned out that it was so much fun, and the movie I thought turned out so well that we kind of forgave, or I did anyway, the damn 16-hour, 17-hour days.
Amazing.
But yeah, it was fun, and I wasn't too sure about the camera. Because I'm used to, you know, eclairs and Aeroflexes, and this was a 4K camera. And they, you know, it goes right to disc, so you don't even see them. I mean, the fun of starting with Cassavetes and working, you could always go to the dailies.
Exactly. So talk to me a little bit about that. I mean, you have a very long and interesting career with him, which led up to an Oscar nomination.
Well... John had been an actor, I think, 7 or 8 years before I started in New York, and I met him, and he was just starting Shadows, which was his first film.
And you were also an associate producer on that?
Yeah, because I came in, and I was looking for a free scholarship at John Cassavetes' workshop.
Uh-huh.
I came in, and the desk and the Silver Variety Arts building were... All the shows, Bob Fosse, and you know, the Broadway shows rehearsed, drama, musicals. I saw him standing, excuse me, I had something caught in my throat. I saw him standing in the back, and I said, "That's John Cassavetes' workshop." And they said, "Yeah." And I went back, and he said, "Hello." I said, "Hello," and introduced ourselves. "What can I do for you?" I said, "Well, I'm looking for the scholarship." You know, he said, "They've been gone for 3 weeks." I said, "Oh well, I didn't. I just saw the paper, the other week, a few days ago. Anyway," he said, "Come on in the office," and we talked for an hour, and immediately I knew this was a man who loved people, who listened to them, and heard my story. And I have an interesting story, having grown up in Burlesque, because my mother danced with Minsky's, and we traveled by train all over the East Coast and the Midwest. And then I had to go to school, which I was not happy about, because I liked being on the road. I got to see the Ritz Brothers. I got to see a lot of beautiful women,
there's nothing wrong with that.
No. No, but going to school was a whole different thing. I didn't want to go. And I go in to the principal, and he said, "Well, you're late. You haven't been to kindergarten, but you're old enough for first grade. See if I can get you." And I said, "Well, I don't give a shit if I go to this goddamn school." That's the language I'd heard in Burlesque. My godmother smacked me across the face. And that was the beginning of my literature.
an education unto itself.
Oh my God. But I went on, and then I never thought about it again until I got out of the Navy, and they had to let me go before I was 21, because if you joined up at 18, that was the rules they had then. And so I decided, I went to Detroit and saw some friends and saw an ad in the paper, "Apprentice wanted, Willoway Playhouse, Broomfield Hills, Michigan. Acting lessons in exchange for painting and building sets." And I thought, that kind of reminds me of when I was small. And so I went there and I got the job. And the second week I got on stage doing about 4 or 5 lines. The audiences laughed. And I thought, well, this is great. I kept painting sets, and then I kept getting parts. And I wrote the Actor's Studio for an audition. And I got a letter saying, yeah, I come in November. So I thought, well, put on my sailor suit, got on a bus, got a cheap ticket to New York, didn't call my aunt or my cousin there or anybody and let them know. And I went and auditioned and didn't get in. Of course, I was naive enough to try to do Eugene O'Neill, Morning Becomes Electra. And at 20, almost 21 years old, I was much too young to really understand that play.
And what year was this?
I was 58, because I got my SAG card in 59. But I went and studied with Stella Adler, and then I wound up, saw this thing, John Cassavetes, he's out in a hit show with Sidney Poitier and Jack Warden, called Edge of the City, and I knew who he was from TV, live television. So I went and... And we went into the room and we talked. He talked for an hour, and he wanted to know my life story. So finally he said, "Look, I got to go, but you could study with my partner, Bert Lane. He'll be in about a half hour." He said, "But we're shooting a movie." So I said, "Where?" He said, "Well, we're shooting it here, and we're making it ourselves." I said, "Can I watch?" He said, "Yeah." So I went in, sat down for about 20 minutes, and I saw every time the cameraman would move the camera, he'd have to unscrew the camera from the tripod, set it down, take the tripod over to where he was going to bring the camera. And I just started helping, spent the night, and John took it. And there were 6 of us, on the crew, and took us to breakfast. And he said, "What did you think?" I said, "It's amazing. I've never seen that done before, and I love doing it." He said, "Well, that's the way we do it." I said, "Well, when are you doing it again?" He said, "Tonight." I said, "Can I come back?" He said, "Sure." So I just kept coming back, and I wound up cutting the film and learning how to cut with John. We had a 16 movieola. We had 2 of them, and we had so much footage we had to sync up by hand because it was all improvised. But it was a great learning experience, When one of the actors got a job, the same when we did Faces, we shot it with 2 cameras with, an Eclair and a Reflex, mm-hmm. And I worked on the crew for the first 3 weeks of it. You know what I mean? But you love doing it, and you love shooting, and John would be down on his knees trying to do his shot, shooting up, and you'd say, John, watch out, you'll throw out your back. He'd say, screw you, Steve. I'm shooting this. You know, it was fun. I mean, that's what filmmaking should be. You know, the long hours, that they can be really strenuous and laborious, but not if you're having fun, and we always did that.
But it's
and
true.
His films, I think, showed that.
You know, it's true, of all the Cassavetes films, you always feel that sense of humanity and that, that grounding in reality that just is sort of unfindable anywhere else.
Well, but he wanted it, and, you know, he taught me about filming. He said, have you ever seen La Terra Trema by Visconti? And I said, no, what is it? He says, it's an Italian film. It's playing up at the Thalia on 86th and Broadway. And he said, you ought to see it. So I go up and I see it, and the next day he said, what do you think? I said, it was good, but I didn't know the actors. He said, well, half of them were fishermen, because Visconti used to put real actors in with fishermen, and, you know, and it's something that John did. We used a boom man on Minnie and Mouse, who had worked at Universal for 20 years. He came apart, and a big part, you know, a good part, and scenes with me and with Jenna. And that's what, I mean, his mother played a Jewish mother, and she was Greek. But he used people that he knew were, I think, that had a depth to them, of humanity, that had comedy in them. They could be funny, they could play a character, and they could straight, and yet it'd be funny. And, you know, the only film I ever missed with him was opening night, and I was in London. I was going to London to do it with Ken Russell and Mary Ev and Michelle Phillips and all, and John said, she'd be back by the 1st of October, because I've rented a theater, you know, on Wilshire, and just off Santa Monica. And he said, to shoot it. I said, don't worry, John, I'll be back. I'm only going for 8 weeks. Well, I went, you know, in June, and I got back in January. And so John played the part I was going to play, the husband, and he got Gazzara to play the director, which he was going to play the director. So that was kind of disappointing to me, not because of I love working with John. I mean, he's one of the best directors, and I worked with some great ones, you know, Don Siegel and, you know, and Adrian Lyon and Warren. We did Dick Tracy. But he was special. And to me and to everyone that worked with him, I mean, I don't know anyone. You know, we'd all disagree about certain things, and you'd say, well, why wouldn't you do that? Well, I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't seem natural. He said, well, try it. You know, and then there's this scene where, yeah, I jump off the roof in traces. And I knew he was leaving. When he came out the window, and then Alan here out there with the camera, and he said, I want you to come out the window and, you know, have your shirt in your hand and jump down here, run down the hill and up Woodrow Wilson. He said, can you make that jump? And I said, can you? He said, well, I don't have to. So I jumped and said, no, not now. So I did it, you know, and then they made me do it about 10 or 11 times, because and finally after about the 11th time, I came up the hill huffing and puffing. I said, I'm not going to do it anymore. You guys can go to hell. And they weren't there. They weren't on the roof. I look in the house, in the kitchen, I look in the living. I don't see them. I come back and I hear this giggling, and they're up on the roof lying down laughing so hard that I did it, you know.
That is hilarious.
They tried it again on Minnie and Moskowitz with the ice cream and the ice cream parlor with Jenna, and he's, you know, they take a big bite. So I took this damn near a scoop and I put it in my mouth, and it was good, but it's cold, you know. So he said, let's do another, and we did about four. I said, John, I'm not doing, you know, 11 takes on this. You know, I'm not going to eat 11 scoops of ice cream. But we had that kind of fun there. For me, it was finding an older brother, and he taught me a lot about life. And I guess he had lost a brother, Steen, misdiagnosed by a doctor who didn't tell him that he had a heart problem. Yeah. And so I guess I always thought of him as an older brother anyway. But he went too soon. And, you know, Greeks are very superstitious people, and he was not going to have somebody put another person's liver in his body, you know. He was writing, and he was writing right to the end, and It's a big loss, but we still have the films and the memories.
We do, and we still learn from them.
Yeah, a lot of people come up to me quite a bit and say, "Well, you were so lucky. What was it like to work with Joss?" You know, and the story becomes, I mean, I can almost do it in my sleep, you know. But, I mean, we lived together in Ireland. We lived together in Italy. And he was just a wonderful person to work with. And I think the film industry misses him, not people or anything, but that actually the way he made films. Yeah, he was very personal. I mean, we came out at the same time in the way, you know, Shadows. And people are going, shoot a film on 16. You know, the studios were, they still think they're big shot, and they thought they were then, ah, a movie on 16, that's not the way, you know. But it doesn't matter. The idea is that, you know, Charlene, you know, and Susan, the two producers, took it and found the script. And they said, we've got to go with this. And they got LeVar to direct it, and then they called me and I had it, and I love the part. I mean, it's a great part for me. I get to play a cantankerous guy, which I'm familiar with.
And then there's Adrienne Barbeau, who's as beautiful as ever.
Oh, she was wonderful. She was so wonderful. And we worked together well. I got along with everybody on that, you know, and not that I don't, you know, it's just sometimes you get people that are selfish and, you know, and they want to look at the camera all the time and pull your eye off, you know, from so that the shot stays on them. And, well, I wasn't used to that, you know. And so when I worked with on Matlock, he tried some tricks, and, you know, Heston did. But it's not about tricks. The trick is performing and making people enjoy your performance. They know what you're going to say. So I just don't like to see them standing there waiting for you to finish to say your line. Just say, I've got to be more interesting than that. And that's what I learned to do. First, you know, starting with Stella and then working with Lonnie Chapman and Kirk Conway and, you know, and then with John.
Because you really were at the Actor Studio. It's given
me a long career.
You were at the Actor Studio during that golden period that people still mythologize and look up to.
No, it was great. I mean, I know, in fact, I've got to call Mark Rydell, who runs the Actor's Studio out here, because I'm, you know, a member of it, and I saw him at a screening just a while ago, and he knew stories about John, because they did Crime in the Streets, and, you know, with live television, then you could, you know, John and I did a Passover thing that Patty Chayefsky wrote. John played the lead, and I said to Patty, let me play the German up in the tower, because don't I have blonde hair? Don't I look like a German? She said, no, you look like a Jew. You play to play the Jew. I said, okay, Patty. But, you know, it was, the theater was great then, and it wasn't so damn expensive as it is now. For God's sake, I mean, it's a fortune.
Yeah, the tickets are unbelievable.
Oh, I know. I saw the trilogy that, Ethan Hawke, I did a film with him in Staten Island a year and a half ago, and, you know, he had, he was doing that Tom Stoppard trilogy. She said, you know, can we come and see the show, see? So I said, sure. And he got me three tickets in one day. You go at 10:30 in the morning, see the first play, then you break and have lunch, you know, and each play is about an hour and a half, 2 hours, then you go to come back, see the second play, and then you break and you have dinner, and then you go, and I remember, my God, that's a real...
That's a commitment.
Yeah, and you need to rehearsal for that, and then, you know, there was a big theater in the round at the Lincoln Center. So, but it was good to see him, to see Ethan do it, and he loves theater. I do, too. I just haven't done any in a while, and there's not much theater out here. It's all small theater.
That's true. Now tell me, what was your experience with Wes Anderson like? You've worked with him three times.
Oh, I love Wes. I mean, you know, and when I got a call, I guess it was Wes's second film, and we had won Within the Soup at Sundance, and I got the first ever acting award up there, and now they give it every year, which is good, because I thought they should, but mainly. But anyway, and a call from Alex Rocco in New York. He said, there's this director, Wes Anderson, who wants to talk to you, and can I have him call you? And I said, well, give me his number, and I'll call him. And so I called, and he said, hello, this is Wes Anderson. And I listened to the message, but this is the message on Alex's phone. He said, I'm looking for Seymour Cassell. I've got a part from you. And so I flew down to Houston, and I met with Wes and Jason Schwartzman, and he said, well, you read the script, do you like the part? I said, yeah. He said, well, you can have it. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And, you know, then he wanted me to Royal Tenenbaums, you know, and after we did Rushmore, and then when I went to do the Life Aquatic, I was shooting a movie with Luke Wilson was directing it, and his brother co-directing, Andrew, and I go to Rome, and Wes says, can I shave your head? I said, Wes, what is wrong with you? I'm in the middle of another movie. He said, well, you could put a wig on. I said, are you crazy? I can't go back to them and say, I'm sorry, guys, I shaved my head. So I had to put a skull cap on. That was a pain in the neck.
Oh, my God.
That would take an hour and a half to 2 hours. But he's wonderful to work with. And the cameraman I've known a long time, Bobby Yeoman, you know, and Wes is very specific in all the things, the way he writes and the way he directs.
Yeah, there's a very... He's got a very interesting, quirky take on life, and you just never know what's going to come next.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's why I guess I appeal to him a little, because, you know, everybody has, not everybody, but most people have a straight look at life, and that's fine. But I just like to find more humor in it, and I always have since I was a kid, and I guess that's being around burlesque, you know, with the comics and the dancers and stuff, and listening to that talk until I started school, and you need humor in life. It's sometimes the best medicine that you can take.
I think that's very true.
Laugh.
Well, we're just about at the end of our time, but I wanted to see if there's anything else you'd like to tell us about Reach for Me.
Reach for Me is an important film, in my opinion. You know, when people wind up in a hospice, and in my character in it, you know, I don't mind it so much because I'm alone and the kid next door is dying and I don't even know when they brought him in. And he said, Pops, what do you do here for fun? And I said, leave me alone, kid. I'm busy dying, you know, and that's kind of my character. And what I noticed when we screened it and won a couple of awards up at Arrowhead and some other place, people forget about people in a hospice.
Mm.
And those are the people that came when you were little and watched you get older and grow up, and they were always happy to see you. And people wind up going to those places and people don't go to see them as much.
Right.
And I thought that this film had a really important message to people, and I spoke it after screening at Arrowhead, and I said, you've got to go and see these people because they cared about you so much when you were little and when you were growing up. And It lights up their face when they see you again. And they understand that you don't have time to come all the time, but you know, one day a month or something, you can go by and see them. And I think that's important because we all tend to forget about that.
That's very true.
We're so busy with our lives. And that was what was so great about the story. And I thought Charlene and, you know, Susan finding this story and bringing LeVar in to direct it, I thought that was the key to the whole success of the film. No matter how difficult it was to shoot it, you know, it paid off. And I love to see audiences see it because, I mean, in Germany I saw them see it and they gave it, you know, a standing ovation. And I've seen it in Poland and Krakow. And people respond to this movie. And not just Europeans more so, but I've seen them respond here too.
And it's an important message for
Americans.
It's an important message for Americans. You're right, because we do have the tendency to discard our elderly.
Yeah, we forget about them because we're so busy with our own lives.
Yeah, very, very true. And I have a question for you. Another question for you. Young actors are always looking for guidance, and I think you'd be a great person to give them a little bit of information. What do you think would be the best thing to say to a young actor who really wants to have career longevity?
Well, I can only go by what I did and other actors I knew. You get involved in the theater off-Broadway or, you know, a community theater, and you don't make any money. But you learn, and you always learn more from being bad than being good. Mm. Because when you're good, you can do that. That always works. But when you're bad, then you think about it. And taking classes, you know, and to do that, you have to find somebody that teaches, that you like their teaching. And I was lucky being in New York, and, you know, Stella Adler was a great teacher, you know. I mean, she really understood Stanislavski. And I took private classes with Lee, too, and he could be very mean and abrasive with people and everything. And I saw women cry and leave and never come back, you know. With me, it just made me mad if he criticized me. But then I'd think it over, and I said, you know, he was pretty right in some ways, and then other ways, and that's why I got mad at him. You know, but then Lonnie Chapman was great, and he brought Robert Frost into my life. I mean, we were doing scenes in, you know, Rupert Cross and a lot of stuff. What's her name? The blonde, Faye Dunaway, you know, because then he gave us all scenes from Robert Frost's poems. So I've read the whole Robert Frost, and I hadn't been aware of that. And you could play them, some of the poems, just like they were a scene written.
Amazing.
And Lonnie did that, and that was great. What station are you at?
This is a podcast that's being put together for the Downtown Film Festival of Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Oh, great.
So people will be hearing you everywhere, and especially people who are interested in this festival and particularly in this film.
Well, this festival is really important because there's nothing downtown that offers this that I know of in a film festival way. You know, the theater down there and that's expensive. But actors, you know, I mean, in New York, the great thing is that I could always go in second act on any show.
Right.
I'd stand outside, people would be smoking a cigarette, I'd smoke a cigarette, then we'd go inside and I'd see an empty seat and I'd sit in it. And I could, you know, see the second and third act. I saw Paul Muni do Inherit the Wind there and paid to see that, and then I went back and I'd second act it because he was always one of the great actors to me, you know, because he did from Chain Gang, you know, and he did the original Mob Guy, and I mean, he was so extremely talented, and you learn a lot by watching actors that you admire.
Without a doubt. Well, thank you so much for this interview. It's been really a pleasure listening to your stories and hearing about your experience on Reach for Me, and we look forward to having people down here and seeing you in person.
Well, I hope I meet you. I'll be there for the thing. So I want to see the Spike Lee movie too.
Yes, Passing Strange should be great.
Yeah.
I've heard great things about that too.
Yeah, I heard a little bit of it on my radio show I did. So please, if you see me there, introduce yourself.
I will definitely come and meet you. And I'm just being told that it's Friday, August 14th is the screening for Reach
right.
for Me.
Next Friday.
At the AT&T Center.
Yes.
All right, great. Thank you so much.
And you know what that theater is? That was some big financial company.
That was the old Transamerica building.
Yeah. And then, do you wonder why our country got into trouble? These guys are building themselves a big theater. They have jet planes they fly to borrow money. My God, there's a lot of money to go around. There's a lot of people to help. Well, I'm not going to bag on you. You have nothing to do with that.
It's an interesting aspect of what's going on down here. You're right about that.
And they needed downtown. So when I got out here, the tallest building was the Federal Building. And I mean, that was the tall building I saw down there. In the early 60s. And now you can't even see the Federal Building on there.
No, it's amazing. It's another
and
world.
And the 405 wasn't built. John said to me, Cassavetti, said, come on, see, we're going to go with Don Siegel and get some golf balls. I said, since when do you play golf? He said, well, I played a little. I said, I've never seen you play it. And I haven't played it. He said, well, then we'll learn. We'll go. And the Federal Building on Wilshire was a golf driving range. The
amazing.
The 405 wasn't even built.
Must have been a different world then.
Oh, well, it wasn't so heavily populated in the cars and the texting. You know, I like pulling over and putting a quarter in a phone book and calling somebody and say, I'm going to be a little late.
Right.
You know, everybody's texting and, oh, well.
We're living in the world.
I'll talk forever. It's really nice talking to you.
Nice to talk to you too. And you know, if I see you down there, maybe we can do another little. We can do another little interview.
Oh, please, just say hello.
That would be wonderful. Well, thank you again. It was just a pleasure. Absolutely a pleasure.
Thank you. It was a pleasure for me too.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.